This is Jay Sekulow. The president cancels a meeting with Vladimir Putin at the G20.
Live from Washington, D.C., Jay Sekulow Live. Phone lines are open for your questions right now. Call 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110. And now, Chief Counsel for the American Center for Law and Justice, Jay Sekulow.
Hey, welcome to the broadcast, everybody. There's a lot going on. We're going to hit a variety of topics today. Everything from Russia, Ukraine, to also two cases we've got going at the Supreme Court of the United States on the life issue. So there's a lot to talk about. We're talking about the U.S.-Mexico agreement. So we've got a jam-packed program. Encourage you to get your friends to listen as well. Let me start with Russia and Ukraine, because, as you know, yesterday the president said that he is not going to be meeting with Vladimir Putin. Now, this comes on the heels of the incident between Russia and Ukraine, where the Russian Navy has grabbed Ukrainian ships and sailors still being held, by the way. Ukraine's president urged NATO to deploy naval ships to the Sea of Azov amid the standoff with Russia. This was a plea that was made not by NATO as a, not as by Ukraine as a member of NATO, but rather, Wes, I guess, why Colonel Smith, they're an affiliated membership.
Right. They enjoy what is called partner status. So they have an ambassador to NATO in Brussels as an observer, but they are not officially a member of NATO. They would like to be. But in this case, for example, Article 5, which is an attack on one is an attack on all, does not apply to Ukraine. However, they have a close relationship with NATO, and they would like for the Western world to send warships to the area, if for no other reason than as a freedom of navigation exercise in international waters.
So interesting that, you know, there was a lot of media yesterday saying, well, the president canceled the meeting with Vladimir Putin because of the activities of the special counsel. But let me read you the tweet from the president and what he said about this. Based on the fact that the ships and sailors have not been returned to the Ukraine from Russia, I've decided it would be best for all parties concerned to cancel my previously scheduled meeting in Argentina with President Vladimir Putin. I look forward to a meaningful summit again as soon as this situation is resolved. So all the speculation that this was because of the situation with the plea agreement yesterday in the Southern District of New York by the Office of the Special Counsel, Special Counsel's Office, by Bob Mueller, that that was the basis upon which the president canceled his meeting with Vladimir Putin was nonsense, frankly. And the president, Jordan, you picked this up yesterday, was very clear going on, even onto the airplane.
That's right.
Air Force One.
Go ahead. So when he was making his way at Joint Base Andrews onto Air Force One, he was asked, are you still planning to meet with President Vladimir Putin? This is after this Cohen news had come out. And he said, as of now, yes, but I'm getting a security briefing on the Ukraine situation right when I get on the plane. And about half an hour later, he sent that tweet out. And the tweet was not had anything to do with just canceling a meeting. It was very specific. And he told those reporters, who again, kind of misrepresented it the rest of the day, but he told the reporters, I'm planning on doing it, but I'm getting a security briefing on this Ukraine situation. Obviously, the president was convinced by his national security advisors that this situation was so dire that it would not be appropriate for the leader of the free world to sit down with President Putin while he illegally has control of these ships and sailors.
Yeah, so I'm going to go to Skip Ash, also colonel in the United States Army, retired. So, Skip, also part of this is a negotiating tactic, and I mean, and I think the president rightfully so. Putin, obviously, Putin would want to meet with the president. The president would normally want to meet with Putin, but he took this action. Putin took this action in the Ukraine, and maybe this forces them to release these sailors and get it back to the table. It's my speculation, but what do you think?
I think that's part of it, because right now there's a principle in international law called the right of innocent passage. And these vessels, these Ukrainian vessels, were going through a territory that was controlled by Russia. But as long as they were doing it peacefully and they were known to be going through there and they were doing it on the surface, not as a submerged submarine, they have the right of innocent passage, and therefore it was wrong for the Russians to come out and take their ships.
All right, so we want your reaction to the president canceling the meeting with Putin, what your thoughts are. We'll take your calls at 1-800-684-3110. That's 800-684-3110. Also, don't forget this. We're in the last day of the massing challenge, and big goal. We need a $250,000 day at the ACLJ. So we encourage you to support the work of the ACLJ. Jordan's going to let you know how to do that.
This is very easy. Go to ACLJ.org. We had a great day yesterday. I thank you for that. For those of you out there, we can reach this goal. You donate online, ACLJ.org. If you make a $20 donation, you're charged $20. We will match that. We have a match that, so it'll be $40 to 8.
At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're engaged in critical issues at home and abroad. Whether it's defending religious freedom, protecting those who are persecuted for their faith, uncovering corruption in the Washington bureaucracy, and fighting to protect life in the courts and in Congress, the ACLJ would not be able to do any of this without your support. For that, we are grateful. Now there's an opportunity for you to help in a unique way. For a limited time, you can participate in the ACLJ's Matching Challenge. For every dollar you donate, it will be matched. A $10 gift becomes $20. A $50 gift becomes $100. This is a critical time for the ACLJ. The work we do simply would not occur without your generous support. Take part in our Matching Challenge today. You can make a difference in the work we do, protecting the constitutional and religious freedoms that are most important to you and your family. Give a gift today online at aclj.org. It's a historic move. Now the United States has moved its embassy in Israel from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem, Israel's true capital. The state of Israel and its very right to exist is a linchpin issue not only in the Middle East, but represents a critical issue to the world at large. Israel is facing unprecedented challenges. Enemies abound. ISIS, Hamas, Hezbollah, and Iran all pledge to wipe Israel from the face of the earth. In his new book, New York Times bestselling author Jay Sekulow presents a powerful political and historical rationale for the existence of Israel as a sovereign nation. Jerusalem, a biblical and historical case for the Jewish capital, presents clear, irrefutable evidence to remove any doubt about Israel's right to exist. And the book dispels legal myths purported by Israel's enemies. Get your copy today, Jerusalem, a Biblical and Historical Case for the Jewish Capital. Available now at Amazon or Barnes & Noble.
All right, so let's get this back into a context here. So the president cancels a meeting scheduled with Vladimir Putin. Why? Because of the situation with Ukraine. Let's go over what that situation is. So let me go first to Colonel Smith. Colonel Smith, what is the situation as you would describe it?
The situation is very, very inflammatory. And so we're trying not to inflame it anymore. It is very, I think, proper for the president to refuse to sit down with Putin, because not only did they seize these three Ukrainian Navy vessels and 24 of their sailors and are refusing to give them back, but in addition to that, since that happened, Russia has moved two combat divisions and two armored brigades to the border with Ukraine, which is a very ominous, threatening kind of gesture. That caused Ukraine and President, what is his name?
That's okay.
Anyway, to declare a military alert. He's activated his reserves, and they are now under martial law with the approval of his parliament. The situation is very, very tense, and it's all because of the thuggish behavior of Vladimir Putin.
So, Skip, give me your view of the significance of this. What does this mean for the rest of the world?
Well, I think we have to remember Putin said that one of the worst things that ever happened in Russian history was the collapse of the Soviet Union. He is an outgrowth. He was a part of the KGB, and his desire is to recreate the Russian Empire like the Soviet Union. A big part of that was the state of Ukraine, the nation of Ukraine now. And this is coming out of the attack by the Russians on the taking of the Crimean Peninsula. Prior to that, this would not have been totally Russian waters. They would have been partially Russian and partially Ukrainian. There would have been no excuse whatsoever to disallow these vessels from going through the Kerch Strait. So what's happening now is, I think, we're getting to the point now that there could be a breakout of war in between Russia and the Ukraine over this. And once a war breaks out, you never know how to keep it localized.
Right.
So that's where the big threat is from the military perspective.
So here's something else that's important. It's not that the president doesn't want to meet with Vladimir Putin. Yeah. It's that in light of what has happened and that the matter has not been resolved with the Ukraine. Remember, the Russians still have a Ukrainian ship and sailors. Three ships and sailors. That has not been resolved. Now, if the matter gets resolved, we're at their G20, perhaps you have a meeting. I would suspect that would maybe be part of what's going on here. I don't know that, by the way. That's just me speculating. But I think that's, if you look at a normal bilateral or here trilateral negotiations, that's the kind of things that would happen to de-escalate the tension. I think one of the things that has to happen here is to de-escalate the tension.
Yes, that's right. And I mean, one thing I would hope is that maybe this has sent a clear message to Vladimir Putin that if you want to sit down with the president of the United States at the G20, which has got limited time here, you better release these sailors and their vessels. And then I think the president may very well be willing to sit down with President Putin. I can't put words in the president's mouth, but it seems like he's indicated that. I don't know if there will be time at this meeting or not, and if the Russians are going to be doubling down on this Ukraine issue. But certainly this sends a message also to Ukrainians that the United States is standing with them against Russian aggression.
Yeah, so we're getting phone calls at 1-800-684-3110. Let's go ahead and take one.
Yeah, Shannon in Orlando, Florida, on line one. Shannon, welcome to Jay Sekulow Live.
Hi, Shannon, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi, thank you. Sure. I do agree with Trump with what he did about canceling the meeting, but I wonder, do you think that Putin's not only doing this as an act of aggression, but maybe to test the waters with America as far as how far they would go?
In other words, trying to get her, see what kind of reaction they would get. Well, the Russians are known for that. I mean, Colonel Smith?
Yeah, absolutely. And not only that, Putin, he is shrewd. We may not like him. He may not be an honest broker, but he is shrewd. He perceives Angela Merkel of Germany, Prime Minister May of the UK, and Macron of France as being weakened, and they are in their own populace. And so he's testing to see whether or not they actually have the will to react. Keep in mind, Jay, that when they took the Crimea, the international community has imposed sanctions on Russia that are still in place. Their foreign minister, when this happened on Sunday, laughed at the idea of additional sanctions. In the meantime, they're also fomenting a revolution in eastern Ukraine, which is really an act of war of sorts. Their proxies are fighting the Ukrainian government in actually what is Ukrainian territory.
Yeah, so Skip, if you look at the situation, the caller, Joan, asked a great question, and that was, what's the motive here? What are the Russians doing?
Well, I think one of the things the Russians have always wanted to do is to split NATO. And I think now we have a situation where only President Trump has really stood strong with the Ukraine in these situations. NATO has backed off, just as has been described, because they are dependent on gas, natural gas coming from Russia. And I think he's creating a situation where he's going to see President Trump may call for action, but NATO may call not to act, in which case President Trump then is going to be confirmed in his view that NATO may not be the alliance that we need anymore because they're unable to protect their own interests.
And one of the interesting aspects of the whole Russia-Ukraine controversy is that Russian tends to be the aggressor here and tends to be the agitator. Gwen on Facebook asks, what did Russia hope to gain by taking these soldiers hostage? Well, world attention and trying to flex power. I mean, they're trying to project an image, like as was said earlier by Colonel Smith. I mean, the fact is that the Russians have always regretted the loss of the Ukraine in that sense. I mean, politically and in their world power quest. So they want to be deemed to be a superpower. And they're flexing their muscles against the Ukrainians. I don't know if they anticipated the reaction they're getting, but I think the president was right in canceling it. It doesn't mean they don't meet ultimately if the situation is resolved over these 3 or 4 days during this conference. Who knows? But I think that the Russians here set this thing in motion and are going to have to pay the consequences of it.
Yeah, Skip is right, too. Russia wants to recreate the old Soviet empire.
No
and
question.
The only thing that is holding Putin back is the united front of the Western nations.
Yep. Yes, I think, too, that at this meeting, I think the president's been clear. If things were settled with Ukraine, he'd potentially be willing to meet. I don't know if that will be the time will be there. And listen, if President Putin wants to double down on this, it's a no loss to the U.S. for the President of the United States not to be able to meet with President Putin. It's a much bigger loss to President Putin at the world stage to be snubbed at the last minute by President Trump. I think it was a very clear power move by President Trump to walk onto the plane and say, oh, yeah, the meeting is still on, but I got to get briefed. And then 30 minutes later, I'm sure all the Russians saw it from his Twitter account, I'm not meeting with him until this Ukraine situation is resolved. And it sends a strong message to our Ukrainian allies and the president there, Poroshenko, that the U.S. is not going to just sit by while Russia bullies Ukraine and the Crimea and allow for the potential for another civil war to break out again.
We're taking your calls on this at 1-800-684-3110. And again, we're also taking your comments on Facebook and Periscope. Lynn on Facebook says, I think they should meet. Well, it's interesting. So you got a geopolitical situation. This is a bilateral situation, two governments. But it's actually trilateral in the sense that the issue is the Ukraine. So for the president to meet without preconditions, which is what you're talking about here, Skip, to me, I think the president said the right message by saying, you don't get this situation resolved. We're not meeting. It was an act of aggression. And this is the United States recognizing this was an act of aggression.
Oh, absolutely. And it clearly was because, again, the right of innocent passage, those vessels had the right to go through Russian waters to get to from one area of international waters to another area of international waters, as long as they were doing it peacefully. And they were. And even warships going through, as long as they're doing it peacefully, have the right to do that. So we have to keep in mind, too, that we have taken a stand with the Ukraine. So we have an ally, so to speak, that we support against the Russian expansionism. So we, if we were to meet with the Russians and look like we were leaving the Ukrainians out of this, it would be the loss of the Ukrainians and it would be loss of our influence because our word couldn't be trusted. This is similar to what the Arabs tried to do with Israel when they blockaded Eilat and wouldn't allow them to go through the waters. It is an act of war to disallow the right of innocent passage in peacetime.
Interesting question coming in from Pat on Facebook, and I think this kind is an interesting one. Hypothetically, would Russia do the same thing if we had a ship in those waters? I think the answer to that is no, but that begs the question that we talked about before we went on the air, Colonel Smith, and that is this a situation where the United States may deploy freedom of passage? And let's describe what that is.
Yeah. It's called a phone exercise, a freedom of navigation exercise. The United States routinely does this. They are doing it right now in the South China Sea near the man-made islands that China has developed and militarized. And so we don't know that this is going to happen. I would not be surprised if, in fact, we send some ships to the Black Sea and to this general area just to sort of show the flag and to reinforce that we have freedom of navigation and that what the Russians did is a violation of that.
I think that the ramifications of this are very serious, and I think the Russians need to get word that this is serious and that the United States, as the world leader, is not going to tolerate it. How do you not tolerate it? You don't meet with the leader of the country that's holding another country's ships in an unprovoked situation. The provocateur here were the Russians. I mean, I don't think anybody can argue that's what it, like I said, despite the media hysteria yesterday about, you know, was the what was going on in New York and the special counsel's office affecting the president's decision to not meet with Vladimir Putin, that frankly was, in my view, absurd. And the president said it, and Jordan said it correctly. The president said when he went on the plane, he was going to be briefed. He was going to make a determination. Once he was briefed and made the decision that they weren't going to meet. Does that mean they will not meet? Depends on what happens while they're there. All right, we'll come back. We're going to take your calls. 1-800-684-3110. We're talking about two cases we've got on the life issue. Very important. We're going to want to get to and other topics as well. 1-800-684-3110. And let's not forget the matching challenge.
Yeah, matching challenge at aclj.org. Anything you're able to donate, let me explain. If you make a $25 donation, you're charged $25. We have a donor ready to match that $25, so it becomes $50 to the ACLJ. You're only charged $25. Great time to support the work of the ACLJ. Donate now, aclj.org.
It's a historic move. Now the United States has moved its embassy in Israel from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem, Israel's true capital. The state of Israel and its very right to exist is a linchpin issue not only in the Middle East, but represents a critical issue to the world at large. Israel is facing unprecedented challenges. Enemies abound. ISIS, Hamas, Hezbollah, and Iran all pledge to wipe Israel from the face of the earth. In his new book, New York Times bestselling author Jay Sekulow presents a powerful political and historical rationale for the existence of Israel as a sovereign nation. Jerusalem, a biblical and historical case for the Jewish capital, presents clear, irrefutable evidence to remove any doubt about Israel's right to exist. And the book dispels legal myths purported by Israel's enemies. Get your copy today, Jerusalem, a Biblical and Historical Case for the Jewish Capital. Available now at Amazon or Barnes & Noble. At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're engaged in critical issues at home and abroad. Whether it's defending religious freedom, protecting those who are persecuted for their faith, uncovering corruption in the Washington bureaucracy, and fighting to protect life in the courts and in Congress, the ACLJ would not be able to do any of this without your support. For that, we are grateful. Now there's an opportunity for you to help in a unique way. For a limited time, you can participate in the ACLJ's matching challenge. For every dollar you donate, it will be matched. A $10 gift becomes $20. A $50 gift becomes $100. This is a critical time for the ACLJ. The work we do simply would not occur without your generous support. Take part in our matching challenge today. You can make a difference in the work we do, protecting the constitutional and religious freedoms that are most important to you and your family. Give a gift today online at aclj.org.
The broadcast, everyone, we're taking your calls at 800-684-3110. We're going to talk, we've been talking about Russia, Ukraine. We're going to talk about some other issues, too. We are also in the final day here of the Matching Challenge campaign for the month of November. And we've got a big goal, about a $250,000 goal for the ACLJ. Jordan will give you more details on that in a moment. But I wanted to tell you that we've got two cases on the life issue that we've filed briefs at the Supreme Court of the United States. For those of you that are watching on TV or Facebook or Periscope, these are copies of the amicus briefs that were filed in two cases. One is Christine Box, Commissioner of the Indiana State Department of Health versus Planned Parenthood of Indiana. The other is Rebecca G., Secretary of Louisiana Department of Health and Hospitals versus Planned Parenthood of the Gulf Coast. What is interesting, both cases are very important. On the one case, the case involving Planned Parenthood of Indiana, we're actually filing a brief, not just on behalf of our members at the ACLJ, which we do often. Our briefs have been cited by the Supreme Court. Of course, we've done a lot of merits cases on the Supreme Court, but our amicus briefs have been cited. But this particular case, we're actually representing families of children that had disabilities that are trying to be protected by this Indiana law.
That's right. So the Indiana law did two things. Both were struck down as unconstitutional. Now it's heads to the Supreme Court. The first, and this was a law actually signed into by Governor Pence at the time, right, now Vice President of the United States. The first required humane disposal of aborted babies. That was all it required, just that they would be disposed of humanely and not treated like medical waste or organs that were removed. And by the way, we go through the history of how, you know, human remains are treated very uniquely. We talk a lot about how, and you hear it in your local news all the time, if a facility is doing anything wrong with those who have passed away, it's serious criminal offenses, the treatment of the bodies of those who have passed. That was struck down as unconstitutional because the court said, you know, they're not humans. But the second, and I think even more shocking, was that the Indiana law barred abortion based off discriminatory practices. So it barred abortion based off gender. So saying I'm going to have an abortion because I don't want another boy. It barred abortion because of a race, which you would think in, again, 2018, that would be pretty easy to meet under the constitutional standards. And it also barred abortion, and as we mentioned, on the basis of its child that has disabilities or that may have. And let me say may have, because that testing that is done in vitro testing is not 100% accurate. There are many examples in our brief of situations where families were told that their children would face serious disease, and in fact, the test was wrong. So they would have aborted a completely healthy child. And we also have, we represent 44 families who gave birth to children with disabilities, some who did not live long lives, but all of the parents have said, some who have, are still living, all of the parents who have said that they were a blessing and that they would in no way, that they put, they were also put under this kind of pressure to abort. And it's wrong to do that to these families.
Well, I mean, these to me are not complicated measures. Now, it's going to the hope here is that the Supreme Court of the United States actually hears the case. That's the big thing. So we've gone from the Ukraine and Russia to the life issue, and that's because look, you understand the breadth and scope of what we do at the American Center for Law and Justice, and these cases are really, really important.
I mean, to read from our brief on page 7, I think it's important to point out that we believe that there is, quote, an additional state interest supporting a ban on eugenic abortions, preventing the pressuring of vulnerable parents into irreversible decisions to abort their children, because that's what this is. This is saying only give birth to the perfectly healthy that we can tell are 100%. So if a test comes up that they may have some kind of disability, have an abortion. That is eugenics at its worst, and the state does have an interest in preventing eugenics in the United States of America.
Well, the state has a compelling interest in defending life. And here's the question. How do you view the unborn child in whatever medical situation they're in? And I view it, and we view it at the ACLJ, as a person. What does a person mean? That means as a person, they're entitled to protection under the United States Constitution. So that's the position that we advocate at the ACLJ. We've advocated that for over 30 years. We're advocating it in Supreme Court briefs right now, and we're going to continue to advocate it that way. So again, I want you to get understanding what we're doing there. I'll give you something else also, and Jordan's going to do this this interview. The work of the ACLJ and our affiliated organizations literally is around the globe. So I want to take this last segment here to last few minutes to talk about a very special broadcast that's coming up this afternoon on Facebook and Periscope.
That's right. On Facebook and Periscope, we'll be going live with Sanjay Solomon. He is the executive director of One Life Movement in India. It is an organization that we founded together. My wife is actually the founder and president. Sanjay and his wife run the organization in India. Sanjay is the executive director, but he's here in the United States with us in studio now. Sanjay, it's great to see you here in the U.S.
Hi, Jordan.
One Life Movement is a program to help those children in slums, but it's also been expanding. We started back in 2011, and it's grown not just in Mumbai, but across the country of India.
Yes, we've spread to Kolkata as well as Orissa, the state of Orissa. Yeah.
And the work that you're doing is really to help children who have nothing. I mean, they are living in slums. We're going to show on our special broadcast later on Facebook and Periscope what it looks like, but also the good things that you've built for these children, the preschools, the kindergarten, and then helping them get into good education.
Yes, we have started this program over there in the middle of the slums. We have the preschool, we have the supplementary education program over there. And of course, we also provide them with an afternoon meal. So we are taking care of their education needs, their health care, and also their emotional needs. So they have issues with parents, with peers, friends, pressures. We kind of, take care of all those things.
Yeah. There's great places to learn about One Life. So you can go to onelifemovement.org. That's a site you can make a donation. And as we say, it only takes one person to change one life. But also on One Life's Facebook page. So if you go on Facebook and you search One Life Movement, you'll find it. And you'll see these wonderful celebrations put together, holiday celebrations, India's National Independence Day celebrations, and a lot of great images so you can see these children, see them learning. You'll see some of both when Ann and I were there to launch officially the programs that we've been getting, but it started back in 2011. A lot of you supported getting this off the ground. So I wanted to give you an opportunity today, if you are inclined to support this kind of work, and the ACLJ is behind it as one of the sponsors of One Life Movement. You can go to onelifemovement.org and join the movement today by donating. Every donation counts. It makes a big difference in India. And Sanjay, as you know, every dime we raise gets over to India.
That's right, yeah. So we are very excited about what can happen in the future, because there's so much of need in India, and there are children in every slum. In fact, in Mumbai, you can say about almost 60% of Mumbai lives in the slums. And these children, you have in a room which is just about 10 by 10 feet, you would have probably two families living together. And so it's really bad conditions for these children. And education, in India is very, very poor. The government has schools, but the schools do not have quality education. And these children will eventually drop out of school. Yeah.
And finally, I mean, it's one of those situations. We were just talking about these pro-life cases. I think you have to take, as a Christian, to a whole life approach. So these children are alive. They're smart. They're learning. We're trying to give them the best opportunity they can.
Yeah, we are giving them the best opportunity. And we are giving them an opportunity to dream. We have always seen these children do not have dreams, because they just can't imagine reaching somewhere. And we are trying to help them with that.
Yeah, just imagine that. Children who just don't have dreams, and we're trying to make sure that they do have those dreams. I can attest to the work. I've been there. I've put those images up. You've seen it before. OneLifeMovement.org to donate. It's a great time to do so and support the work. And check out One Life Movement's Facebook page as well. We've got a matching challenge at ACLJ.org. Support the work we do. And we'll have that live broadcast on Facebook and Periscope with Sanjay later today.
At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're engaged in critical issues at home and abroad. For a limited time, you can participate in the ACLJ's matching challenge. For every dollar you donate, it will be matched. A $10 gift becomes $20. A $50 gift becomes $100. You can make a difference in the work we do, protecting the constitutional and religious freedoms that are most important to you and your family. Give a gift today online at aclj.org.
We will. Live from Washington, D.C., Jay Sekulow Live. And now, your host, Jordan Sekulow.
Hey, welcome to Jay Sekulow Live. Welcome back to our second half hour of Jay Sekulow Live. We are taking your phone calls at 1-800-684-3110. Let me take a couple of calls. We were talking about the life issue. We had a couple of calls come in on that, and then we're going to talk about this trade deal with Mexico that has been proposed, and also with Canada, and some opposition in Congress as well. But I wanted to take the calls that came in on the life issue. It's very important that we hear from those who have been through these situations. Maria is calling in from Michigan on line one. Maria, welcome to Jay Sekulow Live.
Hi, Maria.
Hi. I just wanted to mention when I heard you talking about that, you know, they're false, not always 100% accurate on the medical advice.
Yep.
And I was told with my first pregnancy at 4 months that I might have a baby born with a birth defect due to a high titer, which is a blood test they take to see if you had German measles. And even after I asked them, well, wouldn't I know if I've had German measles while I was pregnant? You know, there's a rash, there's fever, and I never had any of that. They said, well, there's still a 50% chance that your baby's going to be deformed. You should think about an abortion within the next 2 weeks. And as the word abortion was still in the air, my son kicked me for the first time. And from then on, it was like, there's no way, I don't care what this baby's going to be like. He's mine. And he's telling me that he's okay. And he was. And he is today, 30 years old, and the most talented, loving child you could ever meet.
Well, look, this is exactly why we do these cases. I mean, you are exhibit A of why we do these cases. And in this brief, on this case involving children that are diagnosed with special needs or disability, we are actually representing 44 families that have special needs kids. So this is not just a legal academic exercise here. These are actually hearing from parents that have experienced having a child with special needs and loving that child and nurturing that child. And I will tell you something. I've known, we all do. I think there's everybody that's listening to this broadcast, I'm sure knows someone that's in a situation, has been in a situation like this with this special needs child. And the idea that you would, the most vulnerable are the reasons you protect. Always protect those that are the most vulnerable. In our brief at the Supreme Court, since you mentioned this one, and this is the case that's obviously getting a lot of attention because of the impact on it, I think it's worth reading what we said in our argument. The Constitution does not force states to allow abortion for any reason at all, no matter how pernicious. The Seventh Circuit's contrary holding warrants review. So what we're asking here is for the Supreme Court of the United States to hear the case. That's the first step in any of these cases. Get the court to hear the case. And that's precisely and exactly what we're doing with these two life cases. And
there's very much a new court. I mean, with Justice yep. Gorsuch and now Justice Kavanaugh, I mean, you've got two new voices to weigh in and minds to weigh in on these very important issues. Sometimes in one of the cases, there's a split in the circuit. That's the case involving Medicaid. That's the other case going up before the court out of Louisiana and Planned Parenthood Gulf Coast. So there's a split there. And then in this other case out of Kentucky, again, two new voices out of the Supreme Court with Justice Kavanaugh and Justice Gorsuch.
And in these kind of cases, these votes, I mean, this is why their opposition was so high. These votes, you never know how any justice, by the way, is going to rule in a particular case. I mean, it depends on the facts and circumstances, the way the case is presented. But the reason that so many of these justices are fought so the confirmations are so tenacious these days is because of the life issue. I mean, what do you hear time and time again? What is your position on Roe versus Wade? How will you rule on Roe versus Wade? As if a judge is going to pre-decide a case. You know, and Harry, that predisposition of a case, we're only got 50 seconds left here, but the idea that you predispose on any case, but particularly one on the life issue, it smacks exactly what the Constitution says we shouldn't have judges doing, pre-deciding.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So judges are not to make political decisions, particularly to curry favor with Congress with respect to confirmation or other nomination.
All right. So here's what we've got. We're going into a break. We come back. We're going to look at United States, Mexico, and Canada. That pact signed today in Buenos Aires. So a lot going on there. We're going to take your calls as well. But don't forget, we're in the last day for our November Matching Challenge campaign.
That's right. And we have a goal today. Yesterday it was a 400,000 we needed to meet by the end of today. We now have 250,000 less. So we had a big day yesterday. We need to raise $250,000. Support the ACLJ financially. Make that matching donation at aclj.org.
At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're engaged in critical issues at home and abroad. Whether it's defending religious freedom, protecting those who are persecuted for their faith, uncovering corruption in the Washington bureaucracy, and fighting to protect life in the courts and in Congress, the ACLJ would not be able to do any of this without your support. For that, we are grateful. Now there's an opportunity for you to help in a unique way. For a limited time, you can participate in the ACLJ's Matching Challenge. For every dollar you donate, it will be matched. A $10 gift becomes $20. A $50 gift becomes $100. This is a critical time for the ACLJ. The work we do simply would not occur without your generous support. Take part in our Matching Challenge today. You can make a difference in the work we do, protecting the constitutional and religious freedoms that are most important to you and your family. Give a gift today online at aclj.org. It's a historic move. Now the United States has moved its embassy in Israel from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem, Israel's true capital. The state of Israel and its very right to exist is a linchpin issue not only in the Middle East, but represents a critical issue to the world at large. Israel is facing unprecedented challenges. Enemies abound. ISIS, Hamas, Hezbollah, and Iran all pledge to wipe Israel from the face of the earth. In his new book, New York Times bestselling author Jay Sekulow presents a powerful political and historical rationale for the existence of Israel as a sovereign nation. Jerusalem, a biblical and historical case for the Jewish capital, presents clear, irrefutable evidence to remove any doubt about Israel's right to exist. And the book dispels legal myths purported by Israel's enemies. Get your copy today, Jerusalem, a Biblical and Historical Case for the Jewish Capital. Available now at Amazon or Barnes & Noble.
Hey, welcome back to the broadcast, everyone. We're taking your calls at 1-800-684-3110. That's 800-684-3110. We've got a lot to talk about. We're going to talk about the U.S.-Mexico-Canada trade pact with our director of policy, Professor Harry Hutchison. Before we do that, though, I'm going to go right to Washington, D.C. with Than Bennett, our director of governmental affairs, because, Than, I want to get an update on what we're hearing are some new proposals about the border fence.
Yeah, as of yesterday, Jay, where we were is that House Republicans had proposed $5 billion for the president's border wall. That was the number the president was looking for. And the Senate had proposed $1.6 billion. So quite a spread there. There are a couple of ideas that have floated in the last 24 hours, Jay, that I actually think are making some progress here. Probably the one that has the most traction would be that the full $5 billion would be given by Congress to the president, but it would be spread out over 2 years. Now, one of the most significant questions, if that proposal were to carry the day, was the president would have to determine if it gave him enough flexibility with that first $2.5 billion to do what he needed to accomplish over a fiscal year 2019. Jay, Senate Democrats have still said that they are not open to that approach, but if that is an approach that can garner just a few Democrats in the United States Senate and the president can determine that it is enough for him to do what he needs to do on the border wall in 2019, that might be a possibility to averting a government shutdown. So I would say we still have quite a ways to go. But if you look at the last 24 hours, I think a lot of progress has been made. And really, it's progress in the president's direction.
Than, are they allowed to budget that far in advance, or could the Democrat House coming in try to strip that $2.5 billion out for that second payment, if you will?
Yeah, that really is the relevant question, because, Jordan, this Congress cannot bind the future future Congress. So that is why the president's determination, and people really need to pay a lot of attention to this, does it give him enough authority in 2019 to keep the wall on track, like you said, or does he have to depend on that second $2.5 billion that would be promised in fiscal year 2020? People have got to pay attention to this. Don't be deceived. If the president comes back and says, you know, no, if the other Congress sort of pulls the rug out, doesn't give me the next $2.5, then I'm stuck. People have to pay attention to that. But I would tell you this, Jordan, it does put Democrats in a little bit of a bind here. If this proposal goes forward and they don't object to it, if you've got money in the baseline budget, you know this better than I do, it's very, very hard to pull it out. So if you could get this number in there, it'd be a big win for the border wall funding.
I mean, we'll see what happens. Yeah. I mean,
the number's going up.
Yeah, so I mean, they're clearly they're negotiating. I mean, this is what we expect to happen. This is part of an ongoing negotiating process that takes place. Now, Professor Hutchison, we've got the U.S.-Mexico-Canada trade pact signed today, this morning. in Buenos Aires between the United States, Mexico, and Canada, obviously not yet approved by the various governments. But what is this a step forward?
Absolutely. So while border security remains a vexed issue, President Trump, Prime Minister Trudeau, and the President of Mexico today signed a new U.S.-Mexico-Canada trade deal to replace NAFTA. As agreed, the new trade deal is designed to create a more balanced and reciprocal trade arrangement that supports high-paying jobs, particularly in manufacturing and particularly in the United States and Canada. It also creates a level playing field with respect to wages. Wages have been a sticking point because American manufacturers have had an incentive to move plants and other resources to Mexico because some Mexican manufacturing workers are earning roughly $2 or $3 per hour. And so under the new trade deal, most workers will receive at least $16 per hour. And within the automobile industry, 75% of the content of a vehicle must be produced in North America. There are also important developments in the agricultural dairy industry. Canadians, for instance, typically pay 3 to 4 times as much as Americans pay for some dairy products because of strong protectionism in Canada.
Yeah, so this is, you view this as a big step forward.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Now, I would point out that a significant portion of NAFTA language is included within the new agreement. But
well, the president said he wanted to make it better than it was. It was not
absolutely
a great deal.
So the new agreement contains safeguards, but also it contains a provision which will allow us to withdraw from the deal if it's not working in our own interest with 6 months notice.
Not get stuck with it for 2 decades. Go ahead.
Yeah, one of the promises the president made when he was running for office was that he would get rid of the North American Free Trade Agreement. It was a bit of a misnomer. The North American Free Trade Agreement wasn't exactly free to the United States. In many cases, there were high tariffs on U.S. exports to Canada and Mexico, and smaller or sometimes no tariffs on products they were importing to the United States. So what the president has done, and it is his business expertise at work, Jay, he has created a much more level playing field, and hopefully the Senate will go along with this and approve it.
All right, so we are taking your calls at 1-800-684-3110. We're talking about a variety of topics. Jordan, let's grab another call.
Yeah, John's calling from Georgia on line one. If you want to talk to us on air, it's 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110. But now talking about this new replacement for NAFTA. And John, welcome to Jay Sekulow Live, also the wall issue.
Hey, John.
How are you doing today?
Good.
I wanted to ask a question. This wall has been talked about for 2.5 years. We the people, there's our tax money paying for the wall.
Right.
Why do we not have a vote if we want the wall or not? You know, in local elections and state elections, they have referendums on there about schools and things like that.
Sure. Well, that's because you do have a vote. You elected members of the United States Congress, and they were members of the United States. That means the House and the Senate, and you elected a president. So that's how you vote. But we don't have, taxpayers don't vote on individual bills or items. That's not how our constitutional republic is set up. I do understand, John, your frustration. And then I'll let you respond to John's frustration, because the American people are saying, you know, we did vote for this in a very real sense, and we are also paying for it. Some people were saying we're going to start GoFundMe campaigns. The reality is you're already are GoFundMe.
Yeah, I mean, Article 1 of the Constitution gives the Congress the authority and the only authority to actually appropriate funds that taxpayers put into the coffers for projects like this. But again, Jay, I do think the American people voted for the wall. They're certainly paying for it with their taxpayers. And Jordan and I talked about this yesterday, but there's an opportunity to continue to vote for it because it will be very clear which members of Congress are now willing to follow through on funding the wall. And quite frankly, whether your member is a Republican, a Democrat, or an independent, you will be able to see if their vote is consistent with why you sent them there. And yesterday we talked about the two California senators who are adamantly opposed to this, even though Californians are moving more and more in favor of it. Jay, I would just encourage people in California and every other state to watch their senators' votes on this very closely, because while you can't necessarily start a GoFundMe page, Congress still has the authority, you can certainly change your elected representative.
Okay, so let's educate people, Than, on the broadcast. To ratify this, it's been signed by the leaders. To ratify this by Congress, what does it take vote-wise?
Are we talking about the trade agreement now,
yes,
Jordan? Okay, the legislatures in all three countries, specifically in the United States, it would go through the United States Senate. They would have to have a two-thirds agreement. I think more important than that, Jordan, is the timing on this. And this is actually where some of the concern is in Washington, D.C., specifically inside the Republican Conference. They're concerned that if they don't get the text of this before they leave for this year, it might be more difficult next year because of the political pressure to get it through. So the timing of when the United States receives the trade agreement is very significant here. But regardless of what happens, the legislatures in all three countries would ultimately have to approve
it. Is it just the Senate that has to approve this with the two-thirds majority?
Yes.
Okay. I mean, that's. I just want to get people updates. That includes you got to get Democrats.
So how does, how does it look right now, I wonder?
And it wouldn't necessarily help, Thane, even though we get some more Republicans, a few more Republicans next year, it wouldn't necessarily help.
Not necessarily. I mean, look, one of the things here is whether or not it has fast track authority. And I know this is getting into the weeds a little bit, Jordan, but whether or not it can come to the Senate without the ability to amend it or to offer a substitute for it. And that is really what it's going to take to get it through the United States Senate, whether or not it has fast track agreement. Otherwise, you know, Harry talked about the source of origin requirements in it. If every senator can come down and offer amendments to those various technical issues, it's going to get bogged down and it's never going to get approved. So pay attention to whether or not it maintains fast track authority.
So Harry, what's you're smirking over there? So go ahead.
Well, I think the rational side of me suggests that it's impossible.
It's a Friday, you could do this
not approve this deal. And indeed, Chuck Schumer has suggested initially in October that it was a good deal for American workers, but in the face of opposition from the progressive base within the Democratic Party, he has changed his tune and suggested that it is not that the deal is insufficiently protective of workers and the environment. So I think this move, along with other moves by some Republicans, suggests that Senator Schumer has now been fully captured by the Trump derangement syndrome,
He's
in desperate need of our prayers.
We'll talk about where the unions are in this as well, but also we want to talk about the ACLJ. Jordan's going to let you know you can do that.
Right, folks, this is an important day. We need to raise $250,000 by midnight. Yesterday, that was $400,000, so thank you to those who donated yesterday. So we've gotten the number down to $250,000 by midnight. We do that through our matching challenge at ACLJ.org. If you donate $25 right now, that's what you're charged. And we have a donor ready to match that with an additional $25, so it's $50 to the ACLJ. We need you to donate right now with your financial support. We're planning for the next year, but we're working hard for this year as well. ACLJ.org. Donate right now.
It's a historic move. Now the United States has moved its embassy in Israel from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem, Israel's true capital. The state of Israel and its very right to exist is a linchpin issue not only in the Middle East, but represents a critical issue to the world at large. Israel is facing unprecedented challenges. Enemies abound. ISIS, Hamas, Hezbollah, and Iran all pledge to wipe Israel from the face of the earth. In his new book, New York Times bestselling author Jay Sekulow presents a powerful political and historical rationale for the existence of Israel as a sovereign nation. Jerusalem, a biblical and historical case for the Jewish capital, presents clear, irrefutable evidence to remove any doubt about Israel's right to exist. And the book dispels legal myths purported by Israel's enemies. Get your copy today, Jerusalem, a Biblical and Historical Case for the Jewish Capital. Available now at Amazon or Barnes & Noble. At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're engaged in critical issues at home and abroad. Whether it's defending religious freedom, protecting those who are persecuted for their faith, uncovering corruption in the Washington bureaucracy, and fighting to protect life in the courts and in Congress, the ACLJ would not be able to do any of this without your support. For that, we are grateful. Now there's an opportunity for you to help in a unique way. For a limited time, you can participate in the ACLJ's matching challenge. For every dollar you donate, it will be matched. A $10 gift becomes $20. A $50 gift becomes $100. This is a critical time for the ACLJ. The work we do simply would not occur without your generous support. Take part in our matching challenge today. You can make a difference in the work we do, protecting the constitutional and religious freedoms that are most important to you and your family. Give a gift today online at aclj.org.
All right, we're taking your calls at 1-800-684-3110. We've covered a lot of topics today. Kathy on Facebook says that she loves the way we put it on the life issue, always protect the most vulnerable. And what she's referring there is to a case that's headed to the Supreme Court. It's at the Supreme Court in the United States right now. We filed a brief on behalf of 44 families with vulnerable children, frankly, that we want that case heard by the Supreme Court. It's a case out of Indiana. That's one of two that we're involved in. There is Mike on Facebook asked this question, and this is it's very interesting. I think the president should hold firm and get all the wall money at once. That way, we don't have the threat of a partially constructed wall with no extra funding. Well, the president's not asking for the whole $25 billion up front, but I think it is worth always noting of what we're talking. These sound like big numbers. $25 billion, $5 billion. But Professor Hutchinson did an analysis of what that actually represents in our budget back at the beginning of the week. So here we are at the end of the week. And I think it's worth saying again. Harry, if they were to pass a budget that has $5 billion in it for the wall, how much is that? What impact does that have on our budget? What percentage?
Virtually, it would have virtually no impact. Why? Because $5 billion represents less than 1/8 of 1% of the entire $4 trillion federal budget in 2019. And indeed, if you funded the entire wall, $25 billion up front, that would represent around 0.5% of the entire budget for 2019. So Congress is quibbling over a relatively small amount, and it's very small, particularly when you consider national security and the duty of the president, a constitutional duty, to secure our border.
You know, what I'd be interested to know, and maybe Than has some insight on this if there's time for it, but if the president does shut down the government, he refuses to sign this, could he propose the $25 billion with the pathway in DACA? Is there time to do that, Than, in this short period of time? So to get to the $25 billion, but hey, here's what you get, Democrats. DACA codified and a pathway to citizenship codified.
Yeah, certainly. I mean, if there is a will in the Congress door and they can do essentially anything they wanted, I mean, look, they could do it a couple of different ways. You could either work it into the funding bill to try to, you know, put some authorizing language in there and waive some of the rules requiring that not be attached. Or, Jordan, the way this works a lot of times is if you strike a deal that involves non-budgetary items, you know, right at the end of the deadline before you can't meet all the notice requirements, what would happen is they would essentially pass two bills. They would have passed a continuing resolution that would technically keep the government open for 1 week, and then they would past the other items that they came into an agreement with, so they would technically kick in a week later. But here, just very simply put, it's all a matter of political will. If the president strikes a deal with Senate Democrats that is along the lines that you suggest, the Congress can absolutely find a way to get it through.
So Dawson on Periscope asked this question. We asked this to Wes. Would a government shutdown affect military pay?
No. In actuality, 75% of the budget has already been appropriated. And a part of that appropriation is the Department of Defense. There are other agencies that would be impacted, but not the military, thankfully.
Yeah. All right. So that was a good one. Leah on Facebook asked, could we redirect foreign aid to fund the wall? Not really. No.
The foreign aid is directed by Congress. Congress has the power of the purse, and so they put the money there. They do give a lot of leeway for the executive to utilize it, but not that much leeway. I think you'd have to really interpret it very broadly to try to figure that out. And usually they put some parameters on how they like the foreign funding to be used. So, and again, this is more of a domestic really issue because we're talking about our border, although it has foreign policy implications.
Maybell on Facebook asks this. It's good we're able to do a lot of Facebook questions right now. Does Congress even realize how small this number is compared to the total budget? Then I keep bringing that number up from Professor Hutchinson here because it's really, you realize this is just pure politics because the number is insignificant to our overall budget.
Well, especially if you compare it with the economic savings you would get elsewhere in both in law enforcement programs and welfare programs. But the bottom line is, Jay, they know very well the economic impact. It's all about politics. But look, this whole discussion is why we've talked about why if the president comes to a negotiated agreement where he gets $2.5 billion or $3 billion next year, it might work if he gets the proper authorities in there, Jay, because if all of that number is enabled to be used for the wall, it addresses the problem that Jordan just talked about. You can't redirect foreign aids. But if he has specific authorities to use it to build the wall, he can shift some other DHS funding to some of the other law enforcement measures.
Let's talk about what's the fundamental issue here. So the fundamental issue is the need for border security. Does anyone believe that there's not a need for border security? I think everybody here believes there's a need for border security. Wes, in your military experience, you've been around the world. Countries have borders.
Absolutely. It's essential for national security. And you can also make a moral case for this, Jay. If we had a wall, it would allow us to have more legal points of entry and process more asylum claims. Right now, our BCP is spread out all over the place. It would also stop human trafficking.
What do you think, Harry?
Well, I agree with Wes. In addition to stopping human trafficking, it would stop drug trafficking. And so if you look at the total benefits associated with building the wall now from an economic standpoint, it's a win-win for the American people and for the American economy, in addition to which we would have fewer partial shutdowns at the border. In other words, sometimes we have to close the border. Why? Because the Border Patrol officials are overwhelmed because we have all of these caravanners who are massed at the border, throwing rocks, throwing bricks, and attacking Border Patrol agents.
All right, so Max on Periscope Act, is it possible to calculate how much we'll save in the long run with actually having the wall?
I think it would be very, very difficult to calculate because we don't yet know the full extent first of human trafficking. And it's very difficult to come up with an economic calculus for saving those human lives. So I think from my perspective, it is clear that the wall is a net benefit, but I'm not sure I want to get into a calculation on the value and the benefits of saving those human lives that are being trafficked.
So Noel on Facebook asked this question. So with most of the government already funded, would a shutdown be a propaganda attempt by Democrats? I'm going to ask Jordan and then Than.
Well, so right now, 75% of the federal government's funded. That includes defense. This is only would affect, by the way, there could be another 15% funded before December 7th. So we're looking at basically a 10% partial shutdown, State Department, Justice Department, non-essential employees. So financial services would go out. You get Social Security checks would go out. Military's funded. Again, we're talking about non-essential staff from the State Department and Justice Department would not report for duty. And by the way, in these offices, it's mostly the political appointees running the show. They would be reporting for duty.
I'm not going to comment on any of that.
I'm
not going to comment. How about that? That'll be breaking news.
So it'll be a deep state break for those in the Department of Justice and State Department for the non-essential deep status.
All right, so there you have it. All right, it's been a great week. A lot of interesting, certainly covered a lot of topics today. Hey, we are at the last day of our November Matching Challenge. November and December are our two biggest months of the year. Jordan's going to give you the details now, and we really appreciate your support for the work of the American Center for Law and Justice.
That's right. We need to raise $250,000 by midnight tonight. Yesterday, it was $400,000, so we've shrunk that goal. We raised over $150,000 yesterday because of your support, but we need to raise $250,000 by midnight tonight. To do that, we have a matching challenge. Whatever you're able to donate online is doubled. Let me explain it for you. If you donate $15, you are charged $15 on your credit card when you donate at ACLJ.org. We have a donor ready to match that $15, so it becomes $30 to the ACLJ. $50 then becomes $100 to the ACLJ, but you're only charged $50. So you can double the impact. We can get to this goal of $250,000 or even surpass it with your support, financial support. Make that donation, ACLJ.org.
At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're engaged in critical issues at home and abroad. For a limited time, you can participate in the ACLJ's Matching Challenge. For every dollar you donate, it will be matched. A $10 gift becomes $20. A $50 gift becomes $100. You can make a difference in the work we do, protecting the constitutional and religious freedoms that are most important to you and your family. Give a gift today online at ACLJ.